item, informational items on our agenda this afternoon. First up, we have the Police Department North Central Master Plan update. We have some renderings and other information in our packet. Who wants to step us through this?
I'll introduce Bruce BKV that actually knows what the information is.
All right. Welcome. Go ahead.
Council, good to see you. It's been a process in the making, as you all know. We've been working with the police department now for about 3.5 years, and I think you've talked to many of the council as this was being developed as well. The big picture, and again, I don't want to belabor it, but I do want to provide whatever information you all need to kind of go through it. But as we all know, that running out of space. The county's growing, they're pushing its spaces, the police department's growing, and we're looking at a 20-year projection. What we identified there, how are you? What we identified early on the first sheet, are we presenting this, or is it, did you want to bring up the PowerPoint that we had in the packet?
Who has it? Do you have a laptop or have the presentation?
If not, we have the slides in front of us. So the first one, kind of this diagram here, was really an overview of what some of the issues are that are facing the police department. And, you know, visibility, some of it's just clarity of where they are, but the more critical ones was lack of evidence, storage, lack of parking, appropriate for parking for squad vehicles, investigations as far as interviewing, things like that. Growth for space, we're seeing the department grow, interrogation rooms, interview rooms, all of these things really identify a lack of appropriate operational space in the long term for the police department. So, again, in the last 3.5 years, we went through and identified that and came to a conclusion with the council as well as the police department. We all understand the issue. We understand there's the issue as a space needs. How do you best accommodate that? Well, then we started looking at the demographics of the city and where should the department go. And that started off a next iteration of the study and looked at, you know, again, you look at your population of Rochester and you have a clump of population and there's a downtown initiative to fill density in the core. Now that's going to occur. But you also have a lot of population to the north. So we started looking at where should a station be. And we went through and did, maybe analyzed maybe 4 or 5, 6 maybe locations of where that station could go. Through that process, we found the Think Bank. The Think Bank came up as an option. It's a very solid building. The quality of the building is solid. It's adjacent to some of the existing police facilities, operations in that area. It's in an area that's accessible to major roads for movement and things like that. And it's got the potential to not just support it now, but into the long term. The city got what we saw as a very good price for that. And again, we went through that with council to determine what makes the most sense. Do you build next to the highway shop? Do you build, you know, what other? And it was determined that the Think Bank was actually a good option. The city then went ahead and acquired the Think Bank property. And in the interim, there's been some remodeling, some minor remodeling, to help to ease up some of the crowding that the police department has had on that. The other thing that was identified, too, just to help, and the question that came up at one point in time, is what would be at the north station, what would be at the downtown station? So to clarify that for everybody, the police department isn't moving out of the downtown area. There's still a presence required here. So in the downtown, you're still going to have administration, records, patrol, dispatch, in a certain level of evidence that's going to be shared with the county, and fleet maintenance, and some level of that fleet garage is still going to stay at the downtown facility here. The north precinct building would have your intelligence unit, a variety of other forensic mapping units, services, other areas, other departments that are feeling a pinch here that would use that additional space at that. So we've identified how that north station would accommodate it, and John and Chief, if I'm missing anything, please let me know. The other thing, too, is there was a need for Gold Cross ambulance to have some space, so that's accommodated there as well. What you're seeing here, this drawing, which is the site plan for the Think Tank. So when you look at, apologize, I don't have this projected up on the board, but if you look at this kind of gray block right here, that gray block represents the existing building. This bluish teal box that's going off the angle is actually the expansion, the addition to accommodate the long-term space needs for the police department. We also looked at the option here, which isn't part of the scope at this point in time, but there is space on the site to do something in the future, which is what the site identifies. So we developed a concept plan as far as the site plan and floor plans that we know could accommodate that. So again, once the decision was made to go with the think tank, we then again started working with the police department to go through how do you best utilize the space. It's not about just building more space. It's really about how do you best utilize what you have to minimize the amount of additional building. So really, when you see these plans, and it's a little odd the way it's askew, but that dotted line in the middle of these floor plans, that really, to the right side, is the existing building. To the left is addition. We're maximizing utilization of that existing building. We're remodeling and doing whatever we can in that existing building to accommodate all the police operations without building. The majority of what's being built in the addition is additional squad parking, squad car parking space. That's what's done in some of that, as well as forensic mapping for certain evidentiary kind of requirements that Bureau of Criminal Apprehension kind of mandates for certain evidence requirements. So we've gone through this. We've done a number of iterations through that.
It's on the screen now.
Yeah. Oh, great. Excellent. And out of the space planning, what came was, so again, you can start to see, this specific one was, which level? This is the upper level, so the very top level. So you've got police admin on the one level. Oh, I forgot some of the units that are in some of these. But again, we've utilized some of this existing area, remodeled it, but made it work more for patrol and report writing and a variety of things that are required for that. The addition, which is really just primarily parking structure, occurs on this side as well. So if you go to the next image, and again, you can see admin, building support, intelligence, so on and so forth. There are some conference rooms, some training rooms that would support police functions, as well as outside agencies coming in as well, trying to utilize the best we can for that, and direct accessibility out the lobby. We've started to implement a bunch of, again, it's a police station. You want to have a certain amount of security and control. So in the phase one remodeling that occurred, we've already started to implement some security remodeling to the front to maintain control in that area. And if any of the councilmen have any questions as I'm presenting this, please feel free. The next plan, I think, was, so we're going back up this, I'm sorry, we're going the other way, but this is a lower level, the basement level, where again, we're going down and tying into some of the others. Trying to retain, again, when you bought the building, it's got an internal emergency generator. It's a phenomenal asset to the building. So it had some great bones to the building to utilize it. Then if you go up in the floor plans, scroll through, go the other way. I'll go through these in detail, but again, they work well. Then out of developing the conceptual, so we're not into the design of the project. This is still high-level conceptual development. What we looked at was two options. One was there was a previous budget that was put out there. The budget was not totally qualified based on what the project would support. So we came up with two options. One option was to split the project into two phases. The budget that was there would accommodate building that garage addition, with the balance being the interior remodeling of the existing building. So it could be done in two phases. You do one, you complete the documents, you bid it, you construct it, and then after, in the next cycle, you go ahead and do the balance of the interior remodeling of the other building. So you can do it in two phases. The other option is a single phase. You build the addition, you do the remodeling, you do it all. I mean, there's going to be some phasing of work that has to occur, but it's really all done as one project. The biggest difference between the two is cost of living inflation. During the recession, I think we saw increases in construction costs, 2-3%. As soon as we came out of the recession, we're seeing things anywhere from 4.5-5.5% yearly inflation now. So the only thing that happens over time, of course, is things get more expensive. And all of you have been involved in a number of projects over the years, so you see all that. So that's the primary. The other thing, too, that I want to point out to the council is these are what I would consider conservative numbers. You would hope that as we get into the first phase of development, the schematic design phase of the project, and we do some qualified numbers based on the final design, they'd be a little tighter. I don't think they're excessively high, but I know there's some conservatives.
Conservative high or conservative budget-wise?
Conservative high numbers. Okay. I would hope Councilman, I would hope that, to be quite honest with you, I would hope that, I don't know, 2%, 3%, I would hope that we'd be tighter once you got into it. Because, you know, even any project that you do, any estimator that's worth their salt, they're never going to give you low bid. They're always going to give you, they should, if they're smart, they're going to give you an average range, knowing that there's some flexibility. At the end of the day, the last thing I want to do is come up in front of this council, if this project were to proceed, and say, we didn't have enough money in the budget.
Do you also typically include a contingency amount within that total?
Yeah, so what these show, to go over a little bit. So the line item here, what this did is it identifies the addition, the interior remodeling, some site work, monument sign, canine building, a variety of components that are associated with it. It has a subtotal for each of those. The subtotal represents the construction cost of those elements. To that, we add a design and construction contingency. Typically, when you're at an early phase of development, you roughly have about a 10% or a little bit more, especially if it's remodeling, as a design and construction contingency. You always want to retain anywhere from 4 to 5% during construction for the unknowns that occur during construction. So we do have contingencies in here. We also, in some of these, things have changed. So when we first did this estimate on this project, we were working assuming a 2017 construction. So some of the earlier numbers were actually a little lower because we thought things would move ahead at a sooner time pace. We then adjusted these numbers based on inflation. I think if I remember correctly, we might have used 5% on these for inflation, but I don't remember exactly. But we did accommodate for inflation on these. So these numbers here, adjusted for inflation occurring in 2019, 2020, 2019. On top of that, so then you have a construction total. You basically, this number is $10.7 million, $6.6 million, $15.6 million, depending upon which option you go with. Those are the construction totals based on when we anticipate the work to occur. Soft cost is 20%. Again, it's a high number, not a high number, it's a high level analysis of a number based on the things that typically occur in soft cost. And we listed all the things that are in soft cost. You have architectural and engineering, professional service fees, geotechnical, data wiring, potentially construction management fees, fixtures, furniture, equipment. And again, as the project moves forward, what we do is we sit down with our clients and define all those additional kind of ancillary costs to make sure that number is qualified again. So you're starting off as a high level. As you refine the detail and get more information on the project, you're able to tighten up those numbers based upon the exact direction it's in. So that's the budget information. The last piece of item in the agenda that we have for the council then was the schedule. So this starts to identify the time frame of the project. So, you know, assuming whatever the council wants to do, there's some startup, there's some beginning, some execution. We would then go the schematic design. Now these plans have been worked over fairly well with the police department. But again, we need to go into it and make sure we got the right hardware on the right types of doors and layouts exactly that will best support their operational needs. So there's some work to be done for schematic. As once we finalize the schematic design phase, you move into the design development phase. And again, that's really where the detail starts to come into it. What kind of hardware you have, the carpet that you're selecting for various areas, where the camera locations are for security, all the various detail that go into a project before you actually go to construction documents. Once you go through the construction document phase, we're finalizing, we go through various reviews, then you go out to bid. Now, in this particular schedule, what we're proposing is that to do the shell of the garage earlier than the rest of the building, to allow construction to actually start in the summer rather than waiting till the fall. So that does move things up a little bit to allow that to occur. The reason for that is, and we're doing a project over in Desoure County right now, where we bid the precast shell of the building for a new justice center early to, again, to allow them to get footings and foundation and walls in before the winter actually set in. So I think with that, if there's anything else, Chief?
No, the overview. The other things impacting timeline have a lot to do, more to do with the finance side of things and bonding, acquisition fees, et cetera. And Dale is here, who understands that part of it.
So if there's questions in regard to that, you know, what we run into in terms of what might be more expensive later on, put Dale on the spot for that at this question. Otherwise, we'll answer any of you that.
Questions, comments, Mr. Ruska?
Bruce, thanks for the detail. I'm a little bit confused on these two different things. So I would look at option one and option two, but you've got a two-phase option with phase two and phase three. So, you know, are we looking at the single phase? Are we looking at the two-phase, I guess, is my first question.
So the two-phase allows the city to break up, you know, construction cost and total project cost for the two-phase. Your phase one is roughly about $12 million, a little over $12 million. Your phase two is about $7 million, and that's phase one is constructing the new addition, getting that done, and then coming back in phase two. Well, I'm sorry, phase two and phase three is the way it's defined in there. I should clarify, which is a little confusing. You're absolutely right, Councilman. The remodeling of the work that has already occurred on the police department, we always were talking about phase one. So in our minds, when we proceeded with these documents, put them together, phase two was actually moving forward with this. So phase one is actually already here.
Okay, got it. That helps a little bit. So.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense.
So then the total cost that you're looking at would be the 19.5.
Yes.
Okay. If you do that first option.
Again, if you're bidding all the work and locking a contractor in sooner, that's where the single phase option actually, the $18 million or the $16.6 million construction budget helps to save some escalation cost.
Got it, Mr. Wojcik.
This entire project, is there a citywide strategic plan or citywide capital bonding plan or land use plan that would point to this being the right project for that particular site? I ask that because we're talking about a site that's roughly 10 acres in a highly idealized location. It's adjacent to one of the largest parks in Rochester. It is connected to the trail system. It has walkable access to schools and groceries. And we're talking about taking 10 acres and basically cementing in a $0 of property tax creation forever as a result of this. And I'm concerned that this is not the best return on the taxpayers' investment on the site, and that it, while the function of the police precinct could potentially be there, I struggle to see how these other strategic priorities have been contrasted.
Councilman, I think we had gone through fairly extensive analysis of location, and I don't know if we ever looked at how there could be some other use of this property. I think it was the intention and at least our understanding that it was kind of slated for it. That's why the city invested so much. We have, however, indicated there would be some ability to add some rec space, not housing space, but potentially rec space adjacent to it as well that could help.
But I mean, when you look at the floor area ratio on an urban site like this, what kind of floor area ratio do you hit with this design?
We haven't gone through that analysis. I couldn't tell you off the top of
my head. I mean, my guess is it's gonna be less than one or.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Campion.
I kind of am going down the same path as Councilmember Wojcik here, and it just the orientation of the back half of the building. But is that just to align with the existing services that were in kind of that portion? Because it feels like when you set it kind of kitty corner like that, it takes up the maximum amount of site to the amount of area we're building. Is that just preliminary, or are we just seeing preliminary design?
No, we did a very, very efficient garage layout.
Okay.
It's a garage layout that connects to the existing building. And there actually is down where the teller drive-through was on the previously owned bank, there's a lower level connection that we utilize. So really, this layout creates the most optimum layout for that garage. And the garage ends up being split in an upper level, lower kind of relationship that this works out well. So we did go through a number of those.
Do we have funds set aside for this at this point, or is this entirely on borrowing?
Borrowing.
Okay. Do we have any sort? I don't believe we have any sort of a capital facility plan or anything that's in place that relative prioritization of different capital needs.
No. Not that one. Mr. Ruskin.
Roger, maybe a question for you. Is this building addressing some of the needs maybe from the current facility that you have now, or is this kind of just a mirror of what you have now and you're putting it out there? I'm just wondering how much this would pull away from the current.
Well, this is, as you're aware, when we first got involved in this project, it was intended, you know, that we would forecast our space needs. And I wanted to have a plan in place, you know, that five-year plan, what do we do, when we need this. And as Bruce says, it's probably been about 3.5 years in those 5 years. What we're looking at, and to give you the picture of what this looks like, we're anticipating that about 60% of our patrol force will be accommodated in this building. The other functions of administration, planning, technology, crime prevention, training, staff development, all of those functions would be housed in this building. None of our current space is, that doesn't mean we're vacating anything, but because of the growth and the landlocked nature of what we're dealing with here, is we just don't have any of those growth options except, you know, prohibitively expensive ones or ones that conflict with proposed development. So we're not looking at duplicating, we're looking at really creating the space for those essential functions. These functions that remain here are the ones that need the direct day-to-day contact with prosecutor's offices, courts, jail, et cetera. That would be investigations, special victims unit, violent crimes, property crimes, and as I said, 40% of our patrol division to really service this downtown core. So we're not looking at creating a redundancy in that respect. We're looking at actually creating additional space for the primary functions of the police department.
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, just a comment. I still like the plan. I think we went through a process some time ago where we evaluated at least half a dozen locations around the city for their potential, how well they would accomplish our goals, as well as the cost element and so forth, given the growth of our community and the presence that we'd like to see on the north end of town. And I see we'll see have at least two or three other council updates as we get into the plan refinements. So I still like what I'm seeing, sir. So thank you for that. Mr. Wojcik.
Well, and I like the location. I don't want to, I mean, I agree with the purchase and the location of the co-location of a police precinct here. It's just the underutilization of a prime urban site. As I see this as something that has a real effect of costing taxpayers millions of unnecessary dollars lost over a period of a generation.
If I could, Councilman, as well, one of the options we did look at, for the six options, a variety of study items we looked at, one was building a new facility, and that was a more costly addition, of course, was building an entirely new facility.
All right, Ms. Johnson.
This may have been asked before, but regarding the parking spaces there, is that going to be open to people that are using the park across the street? Because that is a very busy park on the weekends.
Not as he describes the secure police garage facility. That's, you know, obviously meant for law enforcement vehicles, particularly because, you know, the secure environment and climate control is really important. Mm-hmm. It is intended that the other parking area would be open for public parking, either for access for police service or other neighborhood uses.
Okay.
So specifically to your question, excuse me one second. So the 83 spaces that you see that ring the external
yes.
perimeter?
Yes.
Those
okay.
The intent would be, part of the process will be, you're seeing a gate here and you're seeing a gate like over here somewhere. The idea is to limit, you know, in today's world, you have to plan for the worst of. So we want to secure this area so that things can't get back there. People
okay.
that can't, don't get back there, shouldn't. But this area, actually, to tell you the truth, if anybody's familiar with the facility, right now there's actually a ring road that comes through here. Again, good law enforcement planning strategy is minimizing potential threat risk from close to the building. So
Okay. And will we be, will we be capitalizing on that parking? Will there be parking meters or paid parking of some variety there? Do you know? Is that something that's been considered?
That's not something that we've discussed.
Okay.
Mr. Newman?
Yeah, this is one of these cases where we've been working on a project so long that sometimes it's difficult to remember how we got here, but we did look at, you know, six different sites around the community. This one was specifically targeted for this use. We spent $3 million on the site. Mm-hmm. That will have to be rolled into the cost as well. We got a limited amount of time, actually, this year to get started on something, and Dale can discuss that. And Michael has brought up before the issue of more uses. I think that's why you see the community center on there, and they've discussed the parking. But I, you know, this has been around a long time, and I just wanted to point out that of the option we looked at, this was the determined to be the best and the cheapest option as far as location for this specific function. So this was intended to be the main use of this site.
Mr. Campion?
So I'll just spin my perspective on this. I think the site is great. Earlier this year, we invested some money in the parking ramp with an option to eventually take advantage of that to build housing or build something on top of it. I see this site, and I see like the blue dashed line, and what I'm a little bit concerned about is it looks like less than half the site actually has buildings on it. So if we're looking for opportunities to maybe do a private-public partnership to develop some housing, or frankly, to lease it as a private development, that I just don't want to preclude that. Like, I understand the desire to get the bonds going and to get the project underway because of our constraints downtown. It's simply, to me, I'd like to see some elbow grease put into, can we redesign the site to best optimize our opportunity to service the public safety needs, but also to look down the road of how else do we leverage the site to do private development, to get the city's tax dollars as efficiently used as possible. Maybe that's open space. Maybe that is a canine training park. Maybe that is something that has to absolutely be on site versus being down the road at Essex Park or being someplace at a different facility where we already have outdoor facilities. But if this is not the optimal use, you know, I want that in your guys' ear. I want there to be a bug in your ear that's saying, is there other ways to leverage this property that it's going to get a better advantage because of where it's located? That's the sentiment behind it.
If I can just comment on that. What you're seeing in terms of the plans that have park plans that have been developed are really a combination of the cheapest, based on layout of the building, the cheapest construction that obviously still meets the needs. But the other area, for instance, when you see canine area and stuff, that is really a very minimal investment in terms of being able to utilize that space now, but certainly be open for other development in the future that would not, I mean, we don't have a big capital investment in any of the outside area that you see that might accommodate.
We have a plan to get done, so my last comment is just the location of those security gates. That's when I see where they're at, I go, that's going to limit the area that's available for private development.
And I think that could be, I mean, Councilman, and again, not to belabor some of this, but I'm, you know, just looking at it, we, our firm does a lot of housing stuff too, not that I do, I'm strictly new government stuff. But I look at the, you know, you need, of course, you need to conform and comply with various setbacks, and then you need to look at that maximum utilization in any housing project. Of course, they're looking for maximum density to justify the investment. So I think there is, I think there potentially could be, I mean, this road could be diverted. I mean, you could bring it up here. And we could, I mean, but the two blocks, I mean, you know, it's clear the old Think Bank.
Not worth even going down the road today. It's just something I want to get near. We could sit here and
guess. I think there is some opportunity here and potentially up in here. I mean, I think there are some opportunities here that could be explored, at least to understand what the footprint and the dynamic would be.
Mr. Wojcik.
First, the question. When does the city council make hard decisions on this?
So I think we should maybe first talk about the issuance of the GO bonds, especially if the council wants to take advantage of being able to roll in your acquisition costs, because that can help drive some of the timing of the issuance to make sure that we're within the 12 months.
I don't have the exact purchase date, but
November. It has to be 36 months after the day we purchased the building.
November 6th.
Okay.
Okay.
November 16th.
36.
Okay, so, yeah, by November 18th, we have to have closed on the bond.
And just my thought, and the reason why I want that.
19.
The reason why I'm interested in that is I would say, as this is shown today, I would not support this. I've been pretty clear in the past about we need to stop putting suburban buildings and single uses on urban sites. And, you know, this should come as no surprise to anybody. Since we first started talking about this, I've been very consistent in that. I am but one vote, but this is not good enough to earn my support at this point.
Mr. Ruska?
Just to capitalize on what Gary said earlier, the projected cost estimate, that does not include the $3 million of the acquisition.
No,
it does not. Okay.
So at about 3.5, 3.7,
yep.
That what you're seeing
okay.
on the screen.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I think a couple of things that, as I'm looking at the analysis here, and granted this is high level, is we are assuming that the work has been done. In other words, I don't want to presuppose what you need. We're a growing community, and I think this site, ideally, it'll be a long time before we get a third precinct or a third location. But I think this, if we're going to use this site, it needs to be constructed with an eye toward, does this really meet our needs for at least, you know, 30 years into the, 25, 30 years into the future. That's what gives me willingness to proceed with something like this. The other thing, quite frankly, is you're working with what you were dealt, and in this case, you've got a great parcel, but you've got an existing building pretty much smack in the middle. That creates some design challenges, I understand. So that would be my challenge, is whatever we end up constructing here, that I think there's a sense that it's going to serve our community for several decades.
That was certainly the intent of the feasibility study, that we were looking at the potential the next time we have that discussion with another precinct would be 25 years before. So that was the design to take us that 25 years into the future.
Yep, okay. Anything else for Ms. Johnson?
I just want to say that I drive by that every day, and it's nice to see it coming to life. You know, it looks nice and cleaned up, and it's nice to see the sign up there, too. So,
appreciate it.
Yeah.
It is, actually. It was really nice to see something that said Rochester Police Department.
Yeah, it's looking good.
Along the same lines, one of the comments I've heard from some people, they like the fact that it's more user-friendly, and I don't know exactly what that means, but it seems more approachable than, you know, coming down to this facility to visit the police department. So if you have that casual question, the last thing we want to be is intimidating to the public. And so whatever we can do to encourage that sort of community participation or invitation, that would be great.
We had two, in terms of the experience, we had two primary purposes. One was identity, frankly. As I said, it's really good to see something identified as Rochester Police Department. The other is that accessibility, public accessibility. That for a lot of folks in our community, it's a long drive downtown. It's not as easy to navigate. The parking isn't as convenient. And we want to, in the very near future, make this a full service facility, that anything you can get downtown, you can get at the North Station, and provide that accessibility for the neighborhood and that north side of our community. So those were two really important aspects for us.
Okay. Any other comments?
What's the procedure? I felt like we got a little geo talk,
yep.
But the process here.
So from a design standpoint, I think we can pull up the schedule, and then we can probably play off of that. If you were to receive direction to move forward today, what would be your next step in moving you back at council?
So there were two things we saw. One was to execute a professional service agreement, and it could be steps of it, it could be the whole thing. We could nail things down tighter. We also, like when we did the fire station, and I know the city's done many other projects, you've done it with using like CPMI, for example, as an owner's rep. We think they're a very good company. We've had some good relationship with them. We'd be looking to work with the city to get a proposal and get a proposal into you, CPMI, and part of the team to get started. We had shown,
What the schedule shows up there is roughly, I believe, about 8 to 10 months of a design period to go through all those. I think the council at some point in time, probably in the next month or so, really would need to take action on whether or not to go with this or not. And if you're going to go with it, then we just go through the additional steps, which is potentially bring the owner's rep aboard, and then also with the idea of just executing a professional service fee. The other thing that, and I don't want to sidestep it, it has been done before, I know it was used on the sports building, but if there's an interest in doing the best value kind of contractor selection process, we should talk about that. The good, the bad, the ugly, did it work, did it not work, what was the general intent? That does have a schedule impact. This schedule assumes that you'd go out to bid, whether it's done with a construction manager or whether it's done through a general contractor, it assumes basically a two-month bidding process, whereas if you go with best value, that, as you all know with some of the other projects you've dealt with, it extends it, you know, maybe 2 to 3 months more for that bidding award value-added process.
All right.
Steve, did I hit upon your questions?
So we have the next council update on March 5th, I believe.
So on this schedule, it shows that the council will take action to proceed with the project on January 15th, assuming next week that you present it in front of the council and take formal action. Then it goes from there to starting with the project. And of course, like one of the councilmen said too, there'd be updates as the project proceeds ahead.
Well, I promise we won't take action on the 15th.
Sorry, that's right. It's not on the
beyond the
professional world, sometimes forget. I apologize.
No worries.
So a question before the council then is, you have enough information for us to bring to you on the 17th. A couple of council members have suggested maybe looking at the site a little different or evaluating it.
With the question being choosing option one, option two, or what's the action item?
The design process.
I think what part of it is as a financial strategy, what is the impact financially? You see the big number. It's always what's that tax impact or what are the other variables in talking to Dale that are the important things. Does it make sense to break it up? Does it make sense to do it all at once?
Okay. Mr. Wagner?
We don't have a long-term financial strategy. I know that's something that we're working on. I have no interest in committing eight-figure commitments until we have a long-term financial strategy in place.
Mr. Campion.
I was just going to ask. I mean, again, this gets back to, we can look at this chart or we can look at the totals, but until we see some of the tax time impacts, that's what I'm interested in. Once we sign up for a GO bond, that's a, you know, 20, 30 year impact to our taxes that we're going to have to levy on an ongoing basis. So,
$1.7 million.
Okay. I think, and then is this the one priority project we're going to take on this year? Is what I'm, you know, the city administrator getting his hands wrapped around all the projects that are coming forward. I think we're talking one of these this year. So what's the priority project? Is it delaying the precinct until 2019? Is this the 2018 project? I'd like to have those numbers written down and preferably in a memo format so I can take a look. But I agree. Once it gets up to eight figures, I start getting a little bit more, well, I'm always concerned, but extra diligence is a good option in my mind.
You bring up, maybe I just add a little bit to what you said, too. I want those numbers, too, but I also want a statement of, you know, the administrative staff have worked together on a unified vision, strategic vision for this community, and this is the priority that meets that strategic vision.
The only thing I would say, and then this goes back to an earlier comment, I'm not sure it's staff
right.
that does that.
Yeah.
I think it's us. If we have priorities for our community, capital projects or anything else, it's us. We set out some of the priorities. We can certainly solicit staff support or information, for that matter, and which is what we're getting on this particular project, but ultimately we'll help set the priorities.
We did take two, and we set two strategic priorities last time we met in a session, and the two strategic priorities that we set as being the most important for the city were long-term financial sustainability, particularly as it pertains to infrastructure, and affordable housing, neither one of which this is falling under directly. So that's why I want that strategic vision.
I would just counter that I believe affordable housing is certainly a significant priority for this community, but not to the exclusion of all others for consideration. Otherwise, nothing else is on the table is potentially what we're saying. I don't believe that's true. I think this community has more capacity than that, Mr. Newman.
Well, Mr. Kennedy.
I was just going to say, the conversation's pivoted a little bit. The goal for me is to understand the financial consequence of signing up for the project. I'm not ceding any authority about setting the direction for the community to staff. It's more of a collaborative discussion at this point. The one challenge is, when we make a decision like this in January, to realize things that are coming back throughout the year that are going to be those investments are not going to be on the table for me. It's not, we make this, this $25 million investment here, and we're talking about, 10 other $20 million projects throughout the year. This is the one shot. So if there are, what I've seen is a few other projects have been being jockeyed around. There's been talk of a hockey arena and talk of a few other kind of renovation projects taking place. Those have to be kind of put on the table at the same time. And sometimes what happens is this one's in January and this one's in April and this one comes about September, and we have a limited ability then to address the strategic decision making. So let's get the cards on the table now and get the financial consequences, especially for the, it's easy to put that out, but if I can see in a memo form what the consequences are for a GO bond to fund this project, probably in both modes. I'd like to see whether it's the two-phase approach or if it's a one-part approach, and get that in a memo so I can sit and look at it as part of the decision making. I think that would make this a little bit easier.
Okay, Ms. Johnson, then Gary.
Yes, can that just be distributed to the entire council?
Absolutely.
Excellent, yeah. Thank you. That was all I had.
Mr. Norman?
I would say, you made a decision 2 years ago to buy this property. It was a strategic mm-hmm. decision that mm-hmm. you're going to proceed with the yep. police precinct. So, to me, this is the first of the building projects. Obviously, you can change your opinion on that, but it was a strategic decision. I think that this wasn't for the city. What I was thinking, and that can change, but I'm saying, I think you kind of went down that path.
I agree. But what was not a strategic decision is the precinct ended up, how it filled in this location and what else was on this location, and that was something that was never discussed. So, but the location itself, I agree, is strategic.
All right.
I think the use as a police precinct was also a decision that was strategic.
You can go back and listen to the audio, and there was at least more discussion on it. I don't know.
Well, I know there was by you, Michael, but I'm saying the purpose in us purchasing the site was for a police precinct building. Yeah. Timing of that is not the issue, but it was, I think, a strategic decision that this was a project that was a priority.
Yeah, I don't think we're revisiting the strategic nature of that decision. But to talk about, do we do $12 million up front, or do we come back and say, well, there's some other things we want to do this year. You need to come up with a project that's 6 million.
And we can certainly get you that.
Right. Yeah. So that's what I'm looking for.
And if it is helpful, it's my problem.
Right. If it wasn't, we would have a different conversation right now.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll move on to our next topic. Next up, we have the Regional Wastewater Facility Plan update, and this involves Orinoco, Pine Island, and the Rochester Northwest Area Territory.
So I'll just introduce our presenters today, Stantec, Nick Halen and Mark Hansen, and the Honorable Mayor from Orinoco, Ryland Eckhurst is here too. So they're going to be making a presentation on a study and evaluation that's been ongoing now for probably a little over a year. This is, Mayor, I don't know if you comment on how many studies this has been so far, but we've been having communications with the City of Orinoco for well over 10 years.
It's been, I've only been here four, so I can't speak to too much beyond that, but my name is Ryland Eckhurst, I'm the mayor. And I'd also like to introduce Bo and Trish Shields and Carl Crom. Carl's are also on our council, along with water sewer facilitator Sheila and our water committee member Larry Stolper, who show support for the project. So, just very quickly, back in 2013, the city did an assessment survey of the downtown area, and it's about 120 individual septic systems, and that was noted as being 75% of those were non-compliant. And so that facilitated a study that was commissioned by Stantec back in 2014, where they looked at the different options with Rochester, Pine Island, and standalone. The outcome of that meeting was a standalone. Since then, we've approached the legislators, and in the Senate Conference, or Senate the Capital Investment Committee that visited us in October 2015, it was a loud, clear message: we need to be regionalized, think more outside of just a standalone. So that prompted us to pull together with Pine Island on a couple, several years of task force meetings off and on. But ultimately, last year, the legislators, we received $500,000 to commission a study to do a regionalization project of the corridor of Pine Island, Orinoco, and Rochester. So we spent numerous times with the Rochester. We've had several meetings with Pine Island. And so this is the presentation I'd like to share with you, the status of where we're at with that project.
So we do have a PowerPoint presentation, and I do have handouts, if I could just hand those out. Start us off here.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Hansen with Stantec, and we're here to present this facility plan update. The mayor, basically these are the items he talked about. Number one was the wastewater facility plan that was done in 2015. There actually was 2015 a memorandum of understanding that was developed between the PCA, Homestead County, and Orinoco, identifying individual septics in the city that warranted attention. And that agreement basically says within 5 years of that date, which puts it out to 2020, that they will comply or have the ability to be served with sewer. So that was done in 2015. Also in 2015, Rochester's Comprehensive Plan 2040 did identify, and there's a statement in there to the effect that it says it may need to serve Orinoco. There's not really specifics for numbers, but it does state that. Pine Island had a memo in 2015 also, which addressed what the impacts would be to potentially serve Orinoco. 2016, the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority ranked the three areas in Pine Island, areas B, C, and F, and those are their rankings there. And then, as the mayor alluded to, in 2017, in September, they approved financing to do this study. The areas are noted here. The red area is what we refer to as Rochester Northwest, 30 A, B, and C, and this information that we've used for Rochester comes directly out of the Northwest Territory Feasibility Study that was done back in 2014. And then in area green is the ultimate service area for Orinoco, and Pine Island's ultimate service area is shown in the purplish color. The areas in Orinoco that are of concern are the areas in yellow with the crosshatch. We go through this, we first look at what the land use, wastewater flow spacing. I recognize we're short of time here, so I'm going to go through these pretty quickly. We start out with the land use plan. We have a land use plan for Orinoco. Similarly for Pine Island, it's land use plan out of their comprehensive plans. Rochester's land use plan comes out of the Northwest study that was done a few years back. Also, they identified the undevelopable areas in that same plan. This is information that's been used. We then further developed the acres of developable land, existing land, and so forth to help develop the flows. Did the same for Pine Island. We've identified the total acres, the developable acres, and then the same for Rochester. And as you can see, the land use categories in Rochester are much greater than they are in Pine Island or Orinoco. So we just got with that same information. In the case of Rochester, there's approximately 7,300 acres, and there's 3,700 that are shown as being developable, which is about 50% of that area that's shown in red. We then come up with the design criteria for Orinoco and Pine Island are pretty similar. These are the numbers that we use. In the case of Rochester, again, the numbers came directly from that Northwest feasibility study. These are the gallons per capita per day, the people per unit, and then the equivalent units per residential and commercial acres, industrial acres. From that, then, we then are able to develop what we see to be the projection population. And as as you can see, for this entire area, which includes about 23,000 acres, if it's developed, would be 16,000. We're projecting potentially a population of 118,000. So that's a significant amount of people, and that's between the three cities, and that's how it would work out. The service area, the density, and wastewater flows are shown here. This is the number of course.
We have a quick question here, Mr.
Sure, go ahead.
So what's the timeline of these projections of Pine Island?
Well,
to 57,000
there aren't really any timelines, if you will. What we'll be presenting here shortly will be the phase one projection, which goes out to about 2040, 2050. And then from what happens from that point on would have to be revisited 10, 15 years from now just to see what's occurring.
So these are the projections of the population based on fully developing the ultimate
right.
service area for each of the communities.
Right.
I think somewhere in your report you said it's based on the capacity. It's a projection based on capacity, not necessarily concrete population projections, what the land could support.
Right, in terms of the ultimate service area.
Whether we actually
right.
do that or not is
right.
totally different question.
That's absolutely
have a question, Mr. Ruska?
Is that, so the area that we're talking about with Northwest Rochester is 65th Street North, that right? That looks like about 65th
yeah.
Street, is
that
yeah,
right?
Okay, and then, in that, so is that just the area that we're talking about here with the ultimate population, the 44,000, or is so right now there's, just want to make sure we're clear on those numbers.
Yes.
So that area that's out there now, do you know what the population is of that whole section now?
Of this whole section right now, we're estimating the population is probably in the neighborhood of maybe 1,000, 1,500 people. I don't know if that's a fair number,
okay.
Richard, or not, but that's what we've used for.
Okay, and then it's the goal, the projection is 44,000 for just that area.
For just, that's absolutely
okay.
Fair. And that's that area fully developed.
Yeah.
So that includes the Douglas area and so forth.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, so continuing on, so this is kind of where, this is our number here, 14.03 MGD. Now the number might be of interest to you folks would be the density per acre. Right? You were talking about that earlier, but in the case of Orinoco and Pine Island, the densities are between 3.1 and 3.6 units per acre, whereas in the case of Rochester Northwest, that density is estimated to be about 6.7.
So we're talking about very much suburban development then?
In the case of Rochester Northwest, that's correct.
No, that's not correct.
What?
No. In the case of Pine Island and Orinoco, very much suburban type
development. That's rural.
In the case of Rochester, urban development.
More urban, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Continuing on, so now we get into, okay, how are we going to estimate phase one? We can say what this is, the big picture, this is what we're ultimately looking for, but what will we do for phase one, which puts us out probably to 2040, 2050? In the case of Orinoco and Pine Island, what we did is we took and estimated the number of building permits per year. Presently, they're experiencing, these numbers are even a little bit high, but 25 to 30 building permits per year. That could, at 2.5 people per building permit, could estimate those numbers. So adding that to the existing population, we're saying our total phase one population for Orinoco potentially be 2940. Pine Island would be 5,000. Rochester, that northwest area, and then you'll see as we get into the phasing, is 4590. And then Orinoco Estates has given us a letter of support indicating that they want to be a part of the process, the project. They're located not either in Rochester or Orinoco right now, but that estimate is 790. So we have a 13,405 population estimated between the three cities for this 2040-2050 design. So if you were to think about back at that 118,000 people, and if this is what's going to happen over the next 20, 30 years, you can see it's going to take 100 plus years to get to where that would ultimately build out. If these numbers continue to stay true and the land use continues to stay true. So from that, we're then able to calculate what our flow is going to be. So we end up with a flow for this phase one divided between Orinoco being this 0.4, Pine Island 0.6, Rochester 0.4, Orinoco Estates is 0.05, so we end up with 1.6 as our design for phase one. As we look at that then, the next slide show equivalent units and how all this compares to the, each of the cities. Equivalent units are typically used to determine what the cost is per unit based on, you know, each of those cities and that facility. And that's what this table is showing here. Probably the takeaway here is in the case of Orinoco, its ultimate flow is 2.26. We've estimated that's 19.3%. That 0.436 is 19.3% of that. In the case of Pine Island, where we're using 0.673, 7.31, that's 9.2%. In the case of Rochester Northwest, the 0.465, if it's ultimate 4.46, that's 10.4% of the total. So our phase one design is about 11.6% of the total. This shows the phasing and color. So we've done this and structured this similar to your growth plan. So the areas in yellow basically are what we refer to as near term, out to 2050, 2040. The areas that are crosshatched are the areas in Orinoco. This is Orinoco, which are of most interest, which would be served immediately. Then the areas in the this color here, the more orange color, if you will, those areas would be beyond 2040, 2050. Pine Island, as you can see, we have the blue. That represents their existing service area. They have a wastewater facility, so that's what's presently being served by that. And as you can see, that wastewater facility does serve areas out significant distance, towards Orinoco, that are in place. Yellow would be, again, the areas out to 2040, 2050, and then these areas that are then 2040 beyond, and then the other areas, of course, are well beyond that. This is Rochester, how we estimated. Again, this is coming directly from your planning department. Within the case of 30A, this would be the only area that would be looked to be served immediately between 2040, 2050, if you will. And these other areas within what we refer to as 30A, B, and C, those areas would be beyond 2050. And then the other areas would be beyond that. Is there any question on this slide?
Mr. Campion.
Yeah, how was the extent of this like figured out? How is that squiggly red line at the top figured out?
Well, it's basically the sewer divide. Okay. So the land of the north of that basically wants to flow north. The land of the south of that flows to the south. So 30B and 30C basically flow up into this area. 30A flows out to this area. So the squiggly lines are kind of representing where the divides are and the highs are.
I just wonder, because I grew up about three blocks north of the highest point on this map, and I have to tell you, I felt like I was in Orinoco, but it was called, you know, it's funny to see that kind of referenced as part of Rochester at 100th Street out there. That's a pretty long ways from downtown. So I'm just wondering, you know, when I see these numbers for build-out, I'm a little bit concerned about how far north we're talking and we're referencing as Rochester.
Well, that's where this here line right here, this dash, and then as it comes up here, that's what your ultimate service area is. Now this divide here, this northwest territory, really represents the boundary of that drainage area. What's shown here is more or less what your urban service area is. So this is in your urban service area that you've identified today. Everything that's outside of that is beyond the urban service area. Then continuing, so as we look at how do we build facilities to serve these areas, based on the direction of the PCA and PFA who are funding this study, if you will, they wanted us to look at it from a more regional approach. So we've identified two regional options: a regional wastewater treatment plant, and then a regional conveyance to Rochester with a future regional wastewater plant. So basically, the second option of the regional delays the building of regional wastewater plant until into the future, knowing that it's not necessarily needed at this time. The connection to Rochester would be provided, and then at a time when it's felt that the area is developed such that it warrants building a wastewater plant, that's when this option is considered. Now, the other options, which would be of less regional significance, would be the four that we've identified here. One would be just Orinoco connecting to Rochester, which was a part of the previous facility plan. And then Orinoco and Pine Island sharing the joint wastewater plant. Orinoco and Pine Island building their own plants. And then portions of possibly Pine Island being served through Orinoco. So these are the options that we looked at, with primary focus on the top two options, recognizing that there is an interest to do either of these two options, then we would explore further into the four other options.
The second one, regional conveyance with the future treatment plant, that must be a force main.
Right. And much of this project is about force mains and lift stations, pumping flows to where we're going. But yes, if we did, and as we'll get into the next slide, and I'll show you a little bit more of the details. So this is our regional wastewater treatment plant and conveyance option. And basically what we're showing here is up in the northwest corner of Orinoco there. The outline in yellow is the conveyance that would go up to Pine Island and connect to Pine Island. The gravity sewer would be built through to the north. This would be a lift station pumping over here to our wastewater plant. The wastewater plant is proposed to be located in this area just south of 100th Street, 28th Avenue. Now, this is outside of the Orinoco city limits, but it is inside the urban service area. And that would be the plant. The plant would discharge, it's proposed to discharge to the Middle Fork to the north on 28th Avenue. In case of Rochester, this would be 30A. There's existing pumping facilities here now that pump south onto the plant. What would be proposed to serve the rest of this area as it further develops would be a lift station built in the center of approximately 30A where the existing lift stations are, and a force main would run up 30th Avenue directly to the plant. Orinoco Estates, located here, the mobile home park, would then include a lift station that pump either directly into the force main or the wastewater plant. So that would be the regional wastewater treatment plant option, building the wastewater. Where we're showing the wastewater plant being built is basically just north of the closed landfill, which is controlled by the PCA. And we'd be just north in that 160-acre piece that's owned by Matthew Construction. So the land here and to the west of the PCA landfill site is presently being mined and gravelled by those folks. We propose to locate it just north at the divide for what flows to the Middle Fork and what flows south to the South Fork. So the significance of this site is recognizing that the natural overflow for this area is to the Orinoco Prairie Science Center, and it meanders its way over to the South Fork. That's the natural overflow. However, recognizing some of the challenges to build a discharge here, the need for sewer here, we basically are proposing or suggesting that the plant be shown here and then discharged north to the Middle Fork. And the Orinoco Estates, the mobile home park, if you will, located here, has a 20-acre parcel here now that's presently a treatment pond. And those ponds would be removed as they would connect to the facility too. And the other thing is presently the landfill site does all routinely wastewater flow to your treatment plant, which obviously would benefit from this if this is located here. This is basically showing some of the land ownership around this area. Also, it shows the contours, which shows how rugged this area really is. And then this basically is showing how the trunks in Pine Island would be laid out. Presently coming down, that would be the lines in yellow are those facilities that would be built to satisfy the regional connection. Wastewater plant coming to the southeast corner. The next slide shows Orinoco and all the Orinoco flows, basically coming to what we refer to as the lift station just north of the Middle Fork, located here. And OLS 3 would come over to here, and OLS 2 would drive over here, and this would all flow over that way. Now, this is the get back to Gary's comment about the Rochester connection and future regional plant. Basically, everything would lay out somewhat the same, wastewater plant would just come at a later date when the need is there. However, a connection to Rochester would occur. Now, previously we were going to build a force main along 100th Street over to the plant for Orinoco and Pine Island to get to there. Now we would build that same force main down through to Orinoco Estates to this location and then run the same force main that's here would be turned around, if you will, and would be pumped down this way, although it would be turned around in the future when the plant got built. But would come down this way, lift station here we call Rochester Lift Station 2, would be constructed, bringing all the Pine Island and Orinoco down to this point, and then pumping along the alignment of the route that was identified in the Northwest Territory study. And that facility would serve phase one, and it would serve out probably 24 years. However, there's not enough capacity downstream of 55th Street to take, obviously, all of Pine Island in this area. So this would be a temporary connection that would allow Pine Island to come this way. They could still decommission their plant if that's what they choose. And then the plant would come at a later date and likely get decommissioned at that point. So this would be the second regional option that we would identify. In the case of Orinoco, we are going to have lateral specific improvements specifically to serve areas B, C, and F. Those are the areas identified by PCA that are in need of the sewer. And our costs are shown here. Basically, phase one, the regional wastewater plant. We've identified the plant, the regional conveyance through Orinoco, the Pine Island trunk, the Orinoco trunk, Rochester's trunk, and a total of $68 million. Okay, that's for phase one. Now, phase one with the regional connection to Rochester, the regional plant will obviously be delayed, so that would not occur. The regional conveyance through Rochester would be, or through Orinoco would be a little bit different. Pine Island's trunk, Orinoco's trunk would be the same. Rochester Northwest would be tied into this. So now, to accommodate this phase one approach with the future plant, we incur a cost of $26 million. So that totals $36 million. So in essence, what you're doing by delaying the future treatment plant is you're, whether the word savings right or not, but you're delaying that cost into the future such that there'd be a delay of, say, $32 million based on present dollars. Now, when you come back and you build that regional plant, assuming you build the same plant in today's dollars, you're also gonna incur some additional force main costs. So you incur additional $79,560,000 whole when you add these numbers up. So what that's telling you is basically you have an increase to do the Rochester connection with future treatment plant, a difference of $68 to $79 of $11 million. So in essence, you're not saving that money, but you're just delaying in the future, but then you're spending additional money. And it likely, now that you're off 20 years from now, you're probably going to build a plant with higher design capacity, so this number would be likely bigger. But so that's how the numbers look for the regional wastewater treatment plant and the connection to Rochester. Orinoco would have its lateral cost, which would be independent of that. That's estimated to be $6.3 million serving this area. Now, presently, Pine Island obviously has rates, as does Rochester. These are what those rates are. Identified in what's been adopted by each of the two cities. And then if we come in and take our specific big dollar amounts and divide it by the equivalent units, those are the numbers we end up with, $4,900 for the plant, the cost for the conveyance suit, which benefits Orinoco Pine Island, is $2,400, and then each of the individual trunks. So if you take that formula and then say, okay, what's going to be the responsibility of each city, the next slide then shows what that would be. So your $40.97 million is divided between the three cities and Orinoco Estates. Those are the numbers based on wastewater flows. The regional conveyance, which benefits Orinoco Pine Island, those would be are based on equivalent units. And then the trunk conveyance through Orinoco, Pine Island, Rochester, and then Orinoco Estates. The lateral costs we talked about with here. So then these are the total dollars for that regional wastewater plant if it were constructed now, as it's estimated. So it'd be $26 million for Orinoco, approximately $30 for Pine Island, $15 for Rochester Northwest, Orinoco Estates, and then the total. And again, this is based on only phase one. Orinoco will have to go through a process to assess the lateral assessments that will be worked through with the city of Orinoco. To move forward with this, the three cities all working together. The PCA has identified a figure which identifies where joint powers agreements exist, sanitary sewer district. You have to put that process in place to work through this. This is showing where those are presently. The next slide shows some of the specifics in a general way of the difference between joint powers and sewer districts, which would have to be worked through. And then also a service agreement. Likely this one would not be entertained with this option. The schedule is basically set up based on satisfying the need of the memorandum of understanding that's been between Orinoco, Homestead County, and PCA. Presently, we're presenting the facility plan to the three cities. The goal would be to come up with a preferred alternative. Whether that can be done in January, that's what the schedule suggests. We would then take that. There's funding is a big part of what we want to do here, so obviously how we go to the legislature with funding for the design plus potential construction, although we're a long ways from the construction based on getting in place a joint powers agreement or working through the three cities with that and also with the permitting. And then that would get us through March. Then if the funding's approved, however that would play out, whether it's for just the design or it would play out, in this case we're assuming it plays out with the construction, the numbers of work at such that completion could be in November of 2020. This is a very aggressive schedule, however, to satisfy that intent of that memorandum, that's what would be needed. So the next steps or the recommendations identified here. Obviously, the project options, we're looking for a preferred alternative that three cities agree that a regional is. We have to understand that the regional cost comparison, that there is an increase to the, although there's a savings, if you will, for delaying the plant. We do incur additional costs to do that if we push it in the future. There's a connection to Rochester we'd have to work through if we do that. The Middle Fork sewer outflow, the phase one design, we need to confirm Pine Island and Orinoco growth. Town of Douglas has some need. The wastewater treatment plant site, the discharge, we need to talk to property owners. The land use, we'd like to confirm with the cities that the land use we're using is reflective of how we see the cities going in the future. The governance, the schedule, and the big one, of course, is the funding approvals that we need to make this happen from a regional perspective, coming up with the recommended alternative. And then moving forward, how the cities would identify people to help with setting up the joint powers agreements and potential sewer districts, who those folks should be. So our next steps, we're presenting the feasibility draft update to Orinoco, Pine, and Rochester. Our next step after this would be, based on comments, would also be to present to PFA, PCA, identify a preferred option. If the three cities agree that a regional wastewater plant is the preferred option and to move forward to capture funding, then we would proceed in that direction. Again, pursuing the funding alternatives, if you will. And then we would finalize the draft report based on that direction. I know that's a lot. I apologize for going quickly, but we'll play it at high points.
Okay, questions, comments, Mr. Woodard?
So, the root of this is basically we have some areas with, something has to be done because we have some failing septic systems out there in different places. That's what's driving the discussion today, is that?
That would be correct, plus I think Pine Island has interest to do things with their treatment plants that are in need, that they
okay.
need to start planning for. Orinoco Estates is out there. They have needs that are out there also. So not only is it Orinoco, but it's also Pine Island.
I mean, this creates a tremendous amount of potential capacity in an area that isn't extensively planned for right now. I guess my question is are in building out this capacity, the capacity is something that comes with this, but this is the capacity is also not something that's needed right now. It's addressing these other issues that are the needs.
That's correct, and I mean we're designing a phase one plant, which somewhat is subjective how we come up with that design number. And as we're working with the three cities, we want to confirm that's an appropriate number. But in essence, yeah, this is going to take many, many years to build out. Now, maybe it could happen a lot quicker than what's projected here, or maybe it's not. I mean, but this phase one design is a sample of the, you know, we're talking about 10% of what the total flow might be is what we're proposing. And I don't know, Richard, if you have anything else to add to that. Or
not this time.
Okay.
Mr. Campion?
Yeah, so Mayor Richard, I was going to follow up. So I know that the MPCA water standards are kind of the suggested ones. We're pushing the limit of what we're going to be able to do with our existing technology. It would suggest that we build another plant that we'd have to operate potentially. This plant would be a regional plant for those properties northwest of Rochester, northwest of our existing development. Wouldn't that double our exposure to potential issues concerning point source discharge?
I can. Wendy Curry, wastewater facilities manager. Yep. So yes, well, I mean, wouldn't double our exposure.
We're however, sharing some of it.
It would share. We'd have to share some of the allocation in the Lake Monroe and downstream Lake and River. So yes, it could. What you know, I tried to find out a little bit about what the limit. I don't know if you talked to the BCA at all what they're thinking the limit would be, but they'll definitely this a new facility out there would definitely have a pretty conservative cost. But I assume that when we're looking at design, we're looking at like a MBR or some kind of a system that would.
Yes, we need the next step in the process would be to confirm with the BCA whether phosphorus limits are going to be within the river. But also depend upon if we do end up decommissioning Pine Island becomes a part of this and may decommission their plant. Technically, one plant goes away and you're putting them.
So there would be some, they could take some from there, but those plants aren't near as large as that district. I mean, just, you know, the number is going to be conservative. There's no question about it. Is it doable? Yep, certainly is.
What does the ERU stand for? Equivalent residential unit? Okay, and the ERU count is based on capacity for residential development. Is that correct?
For basically a residential unit, we're assuming 2.5 people per unit. It's basically based on density, too. How many units per acre are you putting? So when you say equivalent residential units, when we went back in that earlier slide and I pointed out that Rochester was 6.7 units per acre ERU, whereas in the case of Rochester, or in the case of Orinoco and Pine Island, it's more in the neighborhood of 3 units per acre. So that's ERU. So that's referring to the density. And then the population, you multiply that. How many people are going to be in each of those units? 2.5 people per unit, 2 people per unit. And, you know, those numbers are somewhat subjective, but those are the numbers that we use to estimate the size of these facilities.
Okay. Other questions, comments? I know in talking with Mr. Newman, this is going to be a significant legislative topic, I believe, during the upcoming session. And I know the state is preferring, as you mentioned, regional solutions as opposed to individual wastewater treatment facilities in an individual community. So I think this will certainly be discussed from a funding perspective in the upcoming session.
So the one thing about, again, the exposure to changes in the state water regulations is if they convey wastewater to us, our exposure goes up, right? So they would have to share some of the potential downside for having to retrofit our plants to process what they're sending to us.
So, it's unclear. I don't know that our, I'm not sure what you mean. Our limit could go down if we did it. If our plant sizing increased, if our not from Orinoco, though, because they don't have
it. Unless there's special dispensation from the state, essentially. As part of the legislation, they could pass something.
Probably that would be, they're difficult to do because it's a clean water, it's a federal clean water.
All right, any final questions?
Well,
Mr. Woodger?
My biggest concern is the, looking out for, from a capacity standpoint in terms of what we can develop in Rochester, we don't have any issues for at least a generation. So we don't, building this capacity doesn't do anything for us. It potentially, and I'm just concerned about what are the ramifications to the city of Rochester if this massive area developed out as a relatively low density, because I think it would have, being the employment center, it would have probably substantial negative effects on our transportation network in the city of Rochester. So it'd be very hard to support something like this without having a growth plan that works with Rochester in place at the same time.
And it would, honestly, the part that isn't covered is if we add 3,000 new unit developable units out there, what that does to the development of Pine Island and Orinoco. I mean, I think that there's dynamics here at play about people choosing to live in Orinoco versus choosing to live in 75th Street because of that sewer capacity and because of the availability of residential lots to develop. So I'm worried about that. There's fire concerns, there's police concerns, and it's not just that number on the sheet. Once we start opening up that developable area, I kind of understand the system cost of doing that. The sewer cost is those hidden costs you put underground, and if you don't think about that fire cost and the snow plows and all that other stuff, I get concerned we would certainly be setting ourselves up for some other shortfalls we need to take care of.
Okay, anything else on that topic? We're getting close to the top of the hour.
Randy?
Yes.
So I think what's necessary is the council needs to give some indication as to whether you're thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs neutral on this issue of moving forward with at least some element of regionalization with particularly Orinoco to start with, to address some of the failing septic systems both in the city of Orinoco and Orinoco Estates Mobile Home Park. I know Senator Jusenjem, who has been actively involved in this, is going to be looking for some indication from the city as to what your position is. And from a staff perspective, we basically have taken that kind of neutral position. We wanted to see what the results of the study and investigation were. We want answers to some of the questions that Nick and others have answered. We don't have all of those yet. So I think, again, I know the mayor from Orinoco would like, and some of his constituents would like some indication as to, is it totally a non-starter? You're not interested. You'd still be interested in pursuing and discussing this further. There's a lot of issues, as was pointed out on the slide. I think probably were more issues than were available in room on the slide, but I think they would like some direction today.
And I'll just start off by saying I think a regional solution is really the only one that makes sense. Now, how quickly the land development develops how we develop it in our home communities and so forth, those are all obviously open questions. Cost sharing and how it's all managed and so forth. Lots of detail, obviously, but just conceptually, overarching, I think a regional solution is about the only thing you'd really want to consider. Mr. Hickey?
Okay. As long as we're pressing for answers today, I mean, unless I'm missing something, I mean, the right out of the back of the envelope contribution, $17 million for capacity we don't need in an area that we don't intend to develop for beyond 2040, so I'm not sure. Unless I'm missing something, I'm not sure why we'd even consider this.
And I agree. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying primarily from a planning or conceptual planning perspective, that would be your overarching guidance. But whether where we go in terms of the details, yeah.
Again, maybe I'm missing something, but
it seems
like a non-starter.
I agree with Councilmember Hickey. This is an area we've intentionally slated not to develop because of the costs of the water maintenance in that area. So I given the predictable impact this will have on other plans we have for development within the city, I would have a hard time pushing forward with development. We're going to lower density all over by opening up another 3,000 residential units out there that people are going to look to build. And I also get really concerned about what we're using as the density factors and what we're using, how those lots will actually develop. My guess is those are not 7 unit per acre lots that are going to be out there. Those are 1 acre per lot or per home lots that would be developed out there. And it would throw all of this these numbers off. I think our contribution is very high, given that the real origins of this problem are other failing systems that we need to support. And it's not to say we won't be there to support our neighbors, but I also have to look out for the taxpayers of Rochester, and I'm a little bit concerned about the liability we'd be signing up for.
And if we did take and reduce those equivalent units in that 30A, which is all that's being served in the next 30 years, yes, that number would go down dramatically. But right now, that's what the land use calls for, and that's what's in the report. So that's what we use.
Yeah, and I also have to agree with Councilmember Hickey, and I would... There, a regional approach is always better because water flows don't care which side of a line they're on. I totally understand that part. But the issue that we have is Pine Island needs to update their sewage plant and Orinoco needs to take care of some of their sewer responsibilities. To begin the process of creating capacity for 120,000 people is an enormous overkill to what the problem is that we have in front of us right now. And what I'm really curious about, if you actually take a look at the number of failing septic units out there and took this total project cost at 70 or 80 million and figured out, I mean, you might be able to demolish every one of these homes for $500,000 and still come out money ahead. I don't know what the situation is, but that's the point. This is so far beyond what Rochester needs. And sitting here, I'm all for Rochester. I mean, that's my role on the city council here, just as the mayor of Orinoco would be all for Orinoco. The state might, you're welcome to join us, but the state might see this a little bit differently, but if it was neutral to us, it would be, I'd be okay being neutral, but it's not even neutral to us. These other unintended or intended consequences of having this substantial suburban sprawl that goes on feeding into the problems that we have here in Rochester as the regional center is a huge concern, and that has to be taken off the table long before we could support doing a project that would open up that availability or possibility.
Mr. Newman?
Well, I was just going to say you had a lot of good information here today, and I was going to give you the option if you want to wait another meeting and have some time to think about it, you could do that.
I mean,
there is one other shoe to drop on that, and that is the whole issue of bonding. I mean, obviously some of the costs are hoped to be picked up through the state bonding, but there's no way at this point to predict that, and at some point somebody's got to come up with a number how much is going to be requested from bonding for this, which I don't know if the Oracle folks...
Right. And I agree with that. There's a lot of detail here, and please don't misunderstand. I thought the question for today or in the short term was, is Rochester willing to entertain a regional wastewater solution or not? Is it completely out of the realm of consideration? And I think that's all we can answer at this point.
But I would say you do need to reach a decision fairly soon because these folks need an answer.
Right.
They need to figure out what they're going to submit.
If it was only that upfront cost and the bonding, I mean, I get that, but I'm more worried about these other costs, which I don't know how we address that in a short period of time.
Mr. Bilderbeck?
Yeah, and I agree with that, Mike. I mean, the thing is, I wouldn't mind staying neutral, but I want to know what the state's interested in this and where are we looking at time, where are we looking at levels. I think there's a lot of questions unanswered that I would really want to have some idea of where we're at before I would say yes to this. I mean, I understand the regionalization. I think that's a good idea. But again, we're looking at 30, 40 years before we do anything at this point to that area. There's just so many unanswered questions in this whole thing. It would be hard to give any kind of a thumbs up to this.
Well, this isn't the first step. We have to start somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I understand, and I think the sad thing is legislature comes in February. So that's a lot. That's a month away from now. We don't know what they're going to do, where they're heading in this whole thing. I understand where Senator Senchum is coming from. I've had conversations with him. But there's a lot of questions left unanswered for the city of Rochester, what we would do or how we should protect the city and go into these types of events.
I could be persuaded by a bonding package that shows how the benefit is to the city of Rochester, but right now what I see is not persuasive
right.
in that way.
And that's why I say I would take a neutral approach to this point, because I'd want to see, not only that, but I'd want to see what kind of phosphorus levels and things of that nature, and then what's expected of the city. And there's a whole idea of how this is going to be managed, as you alluded to earlier. I think there's an awful lot of questions that we don't have any very good answers to at this point.
And I would just teeter between neutral and actually being opposed from a city standpoint, because the part that has to be addressed there is there has to be some ways of controlling regional growth, which happens around the
right.
country.
Right.
So if there's not regional growth controls in place, then I just couldn't support it at
yeah,
all.
And I agree with that, Michael, but there again,
okay.
that's why I'm saying there's so many things we just don't know about.
Okay. All right.
Okay, we are past the top of the hour, so we'll adjourn and reconvene down in the council chamber.
It's not often I get to say no to $130 million combined in 90 minutes.
Do you need a coffee cup?
What's that?
Do you need a coffee cup?
No.
I don't.
Why do you have a coffee cup?
I have a robot.
All right.